Hello and welcome to the Metrospective. The Mets start a series in San Francisco with a lopsided win behind a great outing from David Peterson and some thunder from Pete Alonso again. Here to talk about it is Rustin Dodd from The Athletic. I'm Ted Berg. Rustin, what's going on?
Hey, Ted. Not a lot. I've got a few more days before we get Tim Britton back writing about the Mets. So the countdown is on and we're all waiting for Tim to get back.
We are. And Tim, I believe we'll be back on the show later this week. I don't want to promise that without having spoken to him, but the signs are good. The outlook is good for more Tim Britton coming soon. But Rustin, you've been filling in so admirably, and the Mets are in this spot where they keep winning games, and we know they keep winning series. This is a thing we talk about this year, how they won the series in Colorado. They're off to a good start in the series in San Francisco. David Peterson has been great whenever he's been needed at the major league level. Tyler McGill is throwing again. They said, you know, rehab starts seem to be on the horizon for him. Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom still out, still no sign of immediate return for either of them. Should a club in the Mets position be proactive when it comes to starting pitching, or do you say, okay, we've got this big cushion, the Braves and Phillies are not playing well, the pitchers we have, Chris Bassett's been great, Carlos Carrasco's been really good, Taijuan Walker's been good, Peterson again has been great, they've been good enough that we can get through this stretch without our two top horses there? Or do you say, okay, like, now we're at the point where starting pitching depth is an issue, and we kind of need to look at our options?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. I think there's like a little bit of a buffer period or a little bit of a period where the Mets can afford to wait because of their 8-game lead, and more so not necessarily like waiting to see how these, you know, guys perform, the David Petersons, the other guys, Trevor Williams, if he gets some starts here or there. But like, let's see, what does it look like for Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer? Because like, the more time you wait, the more info you're going to have on their potential returns. And I just think, you know, obviously the Mets need Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, or at least one of those guys, to be healthy theoretically to be a true World Series contender. But they might not need those guys to make the playoffs, at least not, you know, not they can maybe afford, you know, 4 or 6 weeks without a couple of those guys. And anyway, that's a long way of saying the market is going to heat up more in June and early July, obviously, and maybe just by waiting at least until, you know, early to mid-June to see how DeGrom is looking, to see how Scherzer is coming back, maybe it gives you just a little bit more time to really know exactly what you need. And so maybe there is a time that they need to be more proactive, but maybe that time is more like mid-June as opposed to right now.
Yeah, and you know, mid-June is when you do start seeing like the occasional early mid-season trade. I'd say like this stage of the season, it's very rare for any major acquisition. We're already starting to see the names being thrown about. Frankie Montas is a really obvious trade candidate. The issue, again, I think unless you're going to overwhelm a team with an offer at this stage of the season, it makes a lot of sense if you're a club like the Oakland A's to just sort of like hang out, unless you're concerned that Montas is hurt, and of course there's always that risk. But as the market heats up, as the season drags on, the Mets aren't going to be the only team with a need in starting pitching depth, and so I think it behooves the A's to hang on to that guy because you're probably going to be able to push for a bigger return when there are more competitors for your commodity here, which is an unfortunate way to refer to someone, but in terms of trade, like Montas is a really good pitcher, and lots of teams are going to want that guy.
No, it's always interesting to think about balancing, you know, like how do you play the market? Because on the one hand, if you're looking at, you know, a rental type of situation, like a pitcher that the Mets could go out, a veteran guy that could, you know, give them innings as these other guys get healthy, you know, they're not necessarily looking for a guy, at least, you know, maybe when the deadline comes along, they will be looking for this type of pitcher. But what I mean is they're not necessarily looking for a guy that could fit into a postseason rotation as much as they might be looking for a guy who could make sure that they get to the postseason. And so there is more value in having that guy make regular season starts, right? The quicker you get that guy, the more value he's going to give you this season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you said, so, you know, the question if, like, let's say you're the A's or the Cincinnati Reds or the Kansas City Royals or whatever, it's always a question, do you wait? Because, you know, the less, you know, value a guy or the less games starts a guy is going to make, theoretically, the less value he's given to another team. But, as you said, there might be more suitors, you know, later on so that the market is better. And I don't know. These are all sorts of questions that teams have to ask. But I do think that the Mets are in a position where if they are just looking for a guy that can fill in for the regular season and just make sure that they get to the postseason, maybe that is one situation where you could find a fit of you know, a guy that's not really quite at the top of the market who you could go out and get, you know, a little bit earlier, whether that's, you know, mid-June or late June or, you know, sometime in that timetable.
Yeah, and like you said, there's a case, I think, for being proactive there if it's a down ballot type starting pitcher. But you know, I think until Peterson, and it's hard to think like, oh, you know, David Peterson's going to have a 2.16 ERA all season. Obviously, I think you kind of see and know he's not a frontline type major league starter, but. Is he so much worse than that guy you're going to be able to go out and get at this stage of the season that it's worth making that move and giving up whatever is necessary to get that guy, given that that might be part of a package for perhaps a more elite starting pitcher down the road or something that could be used to address whatever other needs are going to come up, because at some point in this season, other needs are going to come up.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's funny, the Mets have an 8-game lead in the NL East, and more than that, they have a 9-game lead over the Atlanta Braves, which feels like more relevant than just the 8-game lead they have on the Phillies, because I still think the Braves are gonna be their main competition in the division. You know, 9 games on May 24th or May 25th is not it's a significant lead, but you know, it can be erased. But it'll be interesting to see, can they at least maintain, you know, something in that neighborhood into June, because at some point a 9-game lead does become quite a lot of games to make up. So they're in pretty good spot right now.
Something that's come up, I've seen in a few different places recently, and it's a credit to the player, I think, because of how well he's been doing this year, is I've seen a few calls for Luis Guillorme to get more playing time, and it sort of, I hate the term dovetails, I don't know, or a question we got also on Twitter from Nick Paul, who wanted to ask about, I think he's a little bit tongue-in-cheek asking if the Mets will change the way baseball is played across the league, and I'm putting you on the spot here because it's something I'm just thinking about, in terms of Guillorme and in terms of something you wrote about this week, which is Jeff McNeil and the contact-heavy approach and how well that has worked for him this year, and I'm thinking about the ball, and I'm thinking about the infield shift and all of these different factors working to influence the 2022 game. And I'm thinking about a guy like Luis Guillorme, who we know to be a very good defensive player, who I think, you know, you understand doesn't have a lot of power, certainly as a hitter, who at this point does have like a fairly good track record of high on base percentages and decent batting averages. Like, is Luis, first of all, should Luis Guillorme be playing more? And is Luis Guillorme's success a reflection somehow of something different happening in Major League Baseball lately? That is a big question.
I think, I don't know. It shows something about it. I don't. I was gonna say it says something about the value of just getting on base. And so I think we're maybe like 20 years late on this conversation.
Right.
This may have been established. but seriously, no, I think there is something where you can make the case, and people make this case about Jeff McNeil and other players as well, where if you are going to be playing in this environment where strikeouts are such a dominant part of the game, I think there is, you know, sort of hidden value in a player who does not strike out, and that player's value, you know, relative to what it might have been at some point in, you know, various times in baseball is probably a little bit higher. You know, obviously you can't trade all, you know, you can't trade all power or whatever for just those kind of guys. But I think there's like a place for Luis Guillorme, and maybe there's, you know, more value in a guy like that right now. I mean, like even saying all that, I mean, I think we're even a few years late on this. I mean, either, you know, the Houston Astros, even in, you know, like 2017, 2018, were very, you know, proactive and you know, cutting down strikeouts and contact rates, mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. And obviously they had a lot of good hitters and they had lots of other extracurricular activities going on. But I think teams have sort of understood the value of contact as strikeouts have risen, and Guillorme is, you know, in that sort of category. Should he be playing more? Possibly, but like how much more, right? I think when you look at a guy with his skill set, I do think he would be potentially exposed if he was playing every day. But that mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean maybe he should be playing a little bit more. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. I was going to bring up the notion of a player's being exposed, because you hear that a lot. And I think with a guy like Guillorme, what you would say is like, if you look at players who, especially part-time guys who have high batting averages and high on-base percentages, like you're not going to get Luis Guillorme to chase. And I think that maybe the thinking, at least, is that if a guy like that is getting too many at-bats and the book on him is too clear, then pitchers are just going to challenge him. They're just not going to throw him balls out of the strike zone. And you're going to say, well, you know, he doesn't have a lot of power. Let him try to beat us with singles rather than, you know, working the count deep and working his way on base. And I think the thinking is you would start to see that on base percentage come down because there wouldn't be so many walks. And I don't know. You know, like I don't know if that's just sort of like old-time baseball lore about players with this particular skill set, or if there's something to that, and that with more at-bats, you know, it seems impossible to expect him to maintain where he's currently at, which is a 151 OPS plus. That's not Luis Guillorme. If it is, he's an all-star. But if you go back three seasons now, and it's part-time play, it's just under 300 plate appearances. Over that time, he's got a 299 batting average, 395 OVP, not a lot of power, two home runs, a 374 slugging, but that on-base percentage plays anywhere, especially when you are a plus defender at second base, and I think a really good defender at third base. We haven't seen a ton of him at shortstop, but he seems capable there as well. So I think you're right. Like, I think, yeah, he should get at least a little bit more playing time. I think you want to make sure he's not this guy, right? Before, because at this point it's been long enough that you can say like, there's something here and let's see how much it is. And like you said, the question is who sits. Eduardo Escobar seems like the answer right now because he just hasn't been hitting, but Eduardo Escobar is an established major leaguer. He's been great defensively at third. He's got a great arm, at least to the eye. You know, he's been great defensively at third. I don't know what the numbers look like. I also don't think they matter at this stage of the season defensively. And so, you know, it's hard to imagine like sitting that guy down every single day in favor of Guillorme. But at the same time, I think it's totally fair to say this guy needs a little more, a few more looks.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, when you talk about like, okay, he's going to take some playing time away from Eduardo Escobar in a vacuum, that that sounds very reasonable. It's like, okay, you know, you give him a few more starts, you give Escobar a few more days off, and he's, 33, and maybe that helps his legs, and, you know, on down the line, maybe he's more productive as a result. You know, on the flip side, it's okay, you have a Eduardo Escobar who's underperforming a little bit to career norms, and the argument would be, okay, let's keep this guy in there because we think we can get more out of him and we need to get him comfortable. So, I can see the argument for both sides. I'm peeking at Eduardo Escobar's defensive numbers. Again, like you said, I don't think they really mean anything. They are slightly negative in 2022. Not, I don't know that there's any conclusions to be drawn from that, but I've just pointing that out. His DWAR is negative 0.4.
Okay, that's not so good, but like I said, I mean, I think that those things, like when you look at those stats on the granular level, it always winds up being like, oh, there were like two plays he might have made that he didn't make or something like that, and then over the course of a year, really, I think you need like 3 years to get a sense of how a guy plays defensively, and by that point, he's probably not as good anymore. But yeah, like you know, and it's their base defense. It's not like he's a shortstop or a center fielder, so that has to factor into the equation as well. Also, like you know, maybe you're better off then moving McNeil over to third base and playing Guillorme at second. I'd say it's a good problem that your reserve infielder has a 151 OPS plus and deserves more playing time.
I would agree.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Another question we got. This is a grim one. Nosaram, possibly Morrison backwards, definitely Morrison backwards, wants to know, is Francisco Lindor's contract going to be, his word, a disaster?
Well, here's one, my initial argument when I hear...
I mean, first of all, not for Francisco Lindor.
That is very true. And I would say that the beauty of having the richest owner in baseball is that who's to say what is a disaster and what's not, right?
Right, like it's $341 million total. That's a lot of money. That sounds like a lot of money, but it sounds like a lot less money when you have $16 billion in the bank.
That is true, and it may be the case that Francisco Lindor is not playing up to what he is being paid in 2022, and I don't think he was up. You know, he did not. If you were just like looking at like WAR to dollars or whatever, in 2021, I don't think he played to the value of his contract. He's still been, I think, you know, a reasonably valuable major league shortstop. And so if he stays in that, you know, territory, then I don't think, you know, even with, you know, if you're theoretically overpaying this guy, the Mets can afford, a few mistakes here and there. They can't afford to make a lot of mistakes in these sort of things, but they can't afford that. And so I don't think I would be ready to label anything a disaster. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a long-term deal. In 4 to 5 years, we may be having a different discussion. But I think it's interesting because Francisco Lindor is not if you're looking at his career numbers, like it's not like he's hit any sort of part of his career where you would say, oh, okay, now we've reached the decline phase, right? He's still on the good side of the aging curve for the most part. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's that aging curve or whatever has been sped up a little bit. Maybe people used to think it was like ages, you know, 27 to 30. And now it's actually Major League Baseball players peak from like 24 to 26 because mm-hmm. the development is better and they get more, you know, at bats earlier in their career, and youth baseball is different. And actually that's when the players are the best. So I guess I could listen to that argument, and maybe Lindor is sort of on the downward side of his career, but I don't think we can say that for certain. So I still think there might be more in the tank over the next, both this year, next year, and in a few years to come.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that part of it is just, you know, adjusting expectations for the current offensive environment. Like, if you go by OPS plus, he's at 109 this year, which is below his career norm, but his career norm is 115. Like, this isn't that far off, and it's still above average. And when you're a plus defensive shortstop, it's still pretty good. Like, I think it's, and there was on Fangraphs, there was a WAR adjustment in the offseason that wound up giving Lindor, I think, like a full extra win. He was one of the biggest movements there. They changed how they were valuing defense, and it landed him with a 4.2 WAR, which is a very good season for a guy having, you know, by almost all accounts, just about the worst season of his career. Now this year, if you go by OPS, he's down. He's down even from last year. But if you look at the environment adjusted stats, he's been a little bit better. The defense, again, it's such a small sample. There, I. You know, if you squint, there's something's been going on with his throws a little bit this year that's been a little bit concerning to me, but he's still got the range. I think he's still an above-average defensive shortstop, and being an above-average defensive shortstop and above-average hitter makes you a valuable player in Major League Baseball, and it's not like a thing where I think, like, Cody Bellinger just seems like he's just completely gone into the tank. And like, you start wondering about yips and everything like that. Like, it's not that with Lindor. He's just sort of not been quite as good as you might have hoped he would be, because he hasn't played like an MVP candidate, which he did for several seasons in Cleveland. I just think disaster is a premature thing for a guy who's been a valuable player for the Mets to date.
Yeah, and I'm just looking up... You know, I always think of Corey Seager and Carlos Correa being sort of in the same cohort, kind of generation mm-hmm. of shortstops. And Seager right now has 118 OPS plus, and he's worth one WAR, one win this year. Correa is at 117 OPS plus. So, like, they performed better offensively than Lindor has this season, but they're not exactly, like, you can see, you know, the effects of just the offensive environment across the league with mm-hmm. players who are thought to be, you know, elite offensive, you know, shortstops. So I think Lindor is maybe, you know, underperforming what Mets fans expected, but not to an insane degree, I guess, as of yet.
Yeah, I think there's like a disconnect a little bit, because when you see a contract like that, I think you, as a fan, like, the numbers you see are so offensive heavy that you just assume, like, oh, if a guy's getting paid like that, he should be the big bopper. He should be driving in 100 runs and hitting 30 home runs. And, like, that's it. Lindor's had some great offensive seasons, but the offense is just really one part of his game, and there's so much value in the defense.
Yeah. Trevor Story, 112 OPS plus in Boston. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not out of 109. I think you'd like to see a little bit more offense from Lindor.
Of course.
But he's not been a disaster.
Yeah, I think not a disaster is where I'm coming down on that. And I feel like you said, you know, when you consider the owner and the fact that this is a team with the financial wherewithal to walk away from Robinson Cano when it had to, you like to think that there's There's no such thing as a disaster contract for the Mets moving forward. We'll see how true that turns out to be. We've heard about the Steve Cohen tax, that extra threshold on the luxury tax. We don't know how the Mets are going to play it over the long haul. Even Steve Cohen might get frustrated paying that eventually. But you certainly like that he said he was excited to meet that mark, I think. And I think you can hope for enough from Lindor moving forward that, like, even if he's not the megastar you expect him to be when you see that deal, being a really good player is a valuable thing too. And that whatever surplus value they're losing to his contract, I don't even know how you'd figure that out. Like, they're going to be able to cover that.
Yes, I agree.
Well, I'm glad. The last question we got comes from Casual Hoya, who runs an excellent blog about my Georgetown Hoyas, who wants to know, and this is again putting you on the spot sort of quickly, I think we're both going to kind of just look at the stats here. He wants to know, who are your MVPs so far on the pitching staff, in the bullpen, and in the lineup? He also asks me if Narco is my ringtone, which is that's Edwin Diaz's incredible closer entrance music. It is not, only because I haven't figured out how to reset my ringtone because I try not to play with my phone too much. Rustin, have you thoughts on the Mets MVP?
Well, I mean, I guess if I was voting, you know, if I really felt strongly about the, you know, voting ethically, I would just give it to Brandon Nimmo. I think he's been their best position player, and obviously he leads the team in WAR, and I feel like he's stayed healthy, and he's shown, you know, how valuable he is when he is healthy, both on the offensive side of the ball, but also just his defense has been really adequate in center field, and just adequate defense in center field with his offensive profile. All of a sudden, you look at a 5 or 6 or potentially even 7-win player. So I guess he would be my vote. I do think that if you were like going for more like the narrative choice, maybe you could. I could see some a case for Jeff McNeil, just because you're getting, you know, not only are you, you know, getting a really, really valuable player. I think he's right behind Nimmo in WAR. But you're also sort of getting the boost of, okay, we don't know exactly what we're going to get from this guy after last season. Is he, you know, what kind of player is he? Is he part of the core moving forward? And I think he's answered a lot of questions and just been, you know, a really, really valuable player, not only, you know, on offense, but obviously being able to play left field and second base, both, you know, kind of at an above average level. He's been really good. So I don't think you could go wrong choosing either of those guys, at least in terms of like the full team MVP. I don't know. Is there anybody else that you would have a case for?
Yeah, I think it's Nimmo, and I'm glad you made the point about his defense. Like, he went from just like 2 seasons ago, and again, we talk about like aging curves, as a guy who was 27 or 26, I think a lot of people were saying, okay, you'd much rather have him in a corner moving forward. And now it doesn't really look that way, and making yourself a better center fielder and an adequate center fielder is, again, a really good thing, and I think a tough thing to do, and I think something he definitely worked on. The other, if you were a pre-2010 voter, I think you'd support Pete Alonso here, just because he's hit so well, and he's had so many big hits this year, recently in the series against the Rockies with a walk off, or a late inning homer. He is the other guy I'd bring up, but I think you're right. I think it's Nimmo or McNeil. On the pitching side, I think because he's healthy right now, you'd say Chris Bassitt, but I think if you look at the season line, it's still Max Scherzer. That won't be the case in 3 weeks if Bassitt keeps this up, but Scherzer's been a touch better over just about the same amount of innings. And then in the bullpen, it seems like fairly obvious it's got to be Edwin Diaz.
No, I think that all makes sense. I think Scherzer and Bassitt obviously have been but the depth that they've had in their rotation, I don't know if, you know, I guess there's, you're not going to say, you know, Taijuan Walker or Carlos Carrasco or Tyler McGill or whatever have been there, you know, rotation MVPs, but just the collective, you know, of those guys being maybe slightly better than expected has proved to be pretty valuable.
Yeah, it's all, you know, for all the concern, they're 29 and 15 as we head toward Memorial Day weekend. They're certainly going to have the division. I think it would be impossible for them to not have the division lead come Memorial Day. So things are looking up. As I mentioned, I think Tim Britton will be back with us soon. Rustin, do fill in again sometime. It's been great.
Yeah, I'm happy to join anytime.
Till then, peace out.